Kritastubhyamaham tata svasti starvam shitishtara yanirvyalikena hrida shadimeti apmanarpanam. Translation. Lord Brahma said, "My dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you. I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. You have, without reservation, surrendered yourself unto me with your heart for my instruction." So pretty much the kind of our perspective here, of course, is that the sages of Naimisharanya got a problem. That's what got us into this mess, you know. Trying to do good for others. The very, very first sentence in Prabhupada's preface is, we must know the need of society, of the actual human society. We must know the need of our current human society. We're in this together. So it's something, of course, the current need of human society may be changing a little bit from time to time. Yeah. So we have to be investigating that constantly in touch with current human society. And then, of course, Prabhupada expands it in the preface to all living entities, you know, so on. You know. So we find out what they need. And the basic thing is, of course, we need to get out of the material world. You know, and once we're out of the material world, then we need to be engaged, re-engaged in Krishna's service. You know. So how to accomplish that? So we see, therefore, a very, very nice description of what is the material world. It occurs in the first canto a little bit, yes, and then it occurs in the second canto a lot, yeah, and then now in the third canto is occurring again. So basically we're hearing the same lesson again and again and again and again. Yeah. And the incarnations, of course, one part of the lesson is how Krishna is present to his energies. So his energies means earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence. And his incarnations, which is his Shakti Avesh avatars, like the demigods. Because with each element, earth, water, fire, air, there are different collections of subtle administrators who are maintaining this illusion, this world, our situation, our classroom. Yeah. And then these administrators, educators, teachers, they're also then our Leela avatars, you know, besides the Shakti Avesh avatars, Leela avatars and Purusha avatars, and they come and they also give a very specific master's class. They come and teach something specific. You know? So like Narahari is pointing out, we're here with Varaha, going to be with Varaha and his Leela for a long time. And practically speaking, most of the incarnations don't give liberation, what to speak of prema, you know, love of God. Usually we'll see that what Lord Varaha does is comes and set things up again so the demigods can go on with their mixed devotional service. And that's me right here. Yeah, I want to have a comfortable position in my religious institution so I can have some intellectually stimulating problems, get a little bit of flattery and prestige and things like that. And so I'm taking my devotional service very much, you know, I'm sure, in this, you know, devata perspective. Okay. So most of the incarnations, Varaha comes, he adjusts things for the demigods, and they say, "Well, thank you very much for coming, and you're going now, aren't you? you're leaving now, aren't you?" Okay, and he trumpets and goes away. Okay, yeah, and back to business as usual. Yeah. So right now, of course, my Maitreya Vidura, there's more details. They're talking about this creation. The elements have been created. And I guess the demigods have been created to kind of run the thing, but then the human beings and other species of life haven't been created yet. So therefore, Manu is created, and Manu, every what's it called? There are 14 Manus, 14 Manvantars, in every day of Brahma, which makes up 71 Divya Yugas. Like that. And the Manus are kind of like super administrators. You know, give an example, as I've done before. If you're on a boat going across the ocean, there'll be a captain. Okay. But the captain is not there all the time, you know, on the deck with the pilots, with the engineers, with everybody else, navigators, you know, lookouts. The person there is called what? The officer of the watch. I guess, you know, not, you all know this very well. So in one day, what do we have? We have maybe like, four officers of the watch, and they'll run basically with, 6 hours. They'll be by themselves, and they'll have an hour overlap in the beginning and end, you know, and when there are other guys coming on and taking charge and doing the paperwork and that kind of stuff. So maybe four officers of the watch every day. If something big comes up, the captain will come down, or the captain may be coming down anyway to give them instructions like that. So Brahma, in this perspective, is like the captain, and the Manus are officers of the watch. And I was at the airport in Lima, same thing. There was the airport manager, and then there's something other operations officer. Yeah. So at every change of Manu, there's a change of the Indra. There's a change of the seven rishis. There's a change of all the demigods. So Manu is a super, you know, super administrator. He's more than Indra and everybody else in some ways like that. You know, the whole administration changes like that when the Manu changes. And of course, somebody who was the Indra may become something else. You know, he may become one of the seven rishis and so on. And sometimes there's nobody to fill some posts, so Vishnu himself will fill it. You know, so very, very, what's the word? You know, natural sounding, yeah, administration behind everything, with people with superhuman potencies. You know, children can't figure out how daddy makes the car work, you know, or how mommy cooks the breakfast. You know, you have super potencies. So demigods too, they must have their own individual potencies that go right with their bodies, by which they can manipulate the subtle features of the material nature. We can stand up, we can walk, we can breathe, you know, we can use our hands to control things. But also then we have so many extensions and tools. You know, Indra, of course, has his vajra. So we're hearing all about this, and Manu is being created. And our section now is very much talking about this thing about the relationship between Brahma, who's pretty much in the mode of passion, and Manu, who is his first dude, number one man in many ways, and what their relationship is. And their relationship is very much on a bodily concept, because you can't do the job that Brahma is trying to do without getting on a bodily concept. And we see that both of them, to start with, are not. You know, Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu and Satyarupa, they're all on this Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, you know, type consciousness, where they're just absorbed in the glories of Krishna, which are ever expanding. Krishna's always coming up with new aspects to be glorified. You know, but nobody told anybody about the wonderful song that Krishna just composed, funny poem, or the thing he did. So it has to be illuminated, you know, it has to be glorified more in an integrated fashion with all the previous stuff, you know. So, you know, they're on that level, absorbing that, and then the Brahma asks them. And rather than follow the trail of the Kumaras, they're getting agreeing to all this, you know. So this verse, of course, is part of that, and they've agreed. And Brahma is very pleased. You know, of course, Prabhupada's talked a lot about this. My dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you, and I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. So here's again a very, very natural point. It seems that in a natural culture, if you're a sannyasi, for example, you preach to the men, especially someone like Prabhupada. You know? So Prabhupada was addressing himself to the men and expecting that the ladies would be with their husbands or with their daddies, you know, or with their grown-up sons, and they would be hearing it all, you know, right along with them. And maybe more in a more like family setting, they might discuss it then with their father, their brothers and sisters and so on. But in a more public setting, they might be a little more reticent. And especially this, my impression of Prabhupada was preaching to the men. And when it was brought up, we're talking about how women are maya for men. So when it was brought up, Prabhupada would say, of course, you know, man is maya for woman, you know, like that, and so on. You know? So here it's, of course, it's all, we're here with a normal situation, the mode of passion, not ignorance, where we're a lady and gentlemen are together, and it's just, it's a unit, It's a unit, you know. So he's giving all blessings to Brahma, to Swayambhuva Manu and his wife. Okay. Next slide, number 5. Purport. The relationship between the father and the son is always sublime. Wow. Sublime means it pops up over anything in between. You know, nothing stands in between it. You know, it's just, you know, just whoop, goes right over. I think it's lemma means sense perception or something like that. So it goes on below the level of any kind of this experience, you know, the father and son. The father is naturally disposed with goodwill towards the son, okay? And he is always ready to help the son in his progress in life, always ready to help the son in his progress in life. Yeah. Of course, the father is, we're looking at it, basically should be about 25 years older than the son and gone through everything like that, you know. So he should be know, you know, what the son's going through and what he's going to be confronting. And maybe the details will change, you know. Yeah. But in general, he's in a good position. So it's not that when you grow up and get married, your father forgets about you. No, the inclination is, okay, now I'm going to go on helping. But now I'm going to help you with children and grandchildren and that kind of stuff, you know. And now you're turning 50 and I'm turning 75, okay. I'm entering sannyas and you're entering vanaprasth, okay, yeah. So in a natural situation, this is manifesting in a very, very nice relationship. Mother and son, we have a lot of that, you know, mother and children. But here also it's focusing. There's a very nice education about what should really be going on and how degraded, you know, perverted, you know, dead, impersonal, is saturated with impersonalism is our society. It says the father is naturally disposed with goodwill towards the son. When the lady wolf has her babies, the first tendency of the he wolf is to eat them. But she growls at him and snaps his nose off if he gets too close, and then he kind of grumbles and goes out and gets some more food and brings it back, you know, and vomits it up for her to eat. And then at some point, one of the little wolves licks his chin, like you're supposed to do to a superior, you know, if you're a wolf or a dog. And it kicks in the archetypal daddy intelligence, which is a part of the Virat Roop. Okay, so it kicks in and suddenly then, oh, yeah, my son, you know, yeah. So there are different things the little wolf does as a part of the Virat Roop, which kick in the daddy wolf intelligence, and then we're on the road, okay? Then Prabhupada says, but in spite of the father's goodwill, the son is sometimes misguided because of his misuse of personal independence. Every living entity, however small or big he may be, has the choice of independence. Wow, that's a nice little kind of broader perspective. You know, say, yeah, we may be tiny, but Krishna is very, very, good at looking at tiny things. Krishna loves every little thing. He's so powerful. So when one little thing, some fellow asked Nanda Maharaj, how is your new baby, Krishna? Because everybody is so happy that Nanda and Yashoda have got a baby, and he seems so wonderful. One person asked Nanda, how's your little boy growing up? And Nanda says, oh, he's very, very nice. He's such a wonderful little child. We feel so blessed by Lord Narayan. You know, he said, but he's also very sensitive. You know, his sweet rice, it has to have just the right kind of milk, just the right temperature, just the right sweetness, just the right texture. You know, and if it's a little bit off, he suffers. He suffers from it. He doesn't complain, but we can tell that it's not exactly just right. He's so sensitive, you know. Yeah. So Krishna is aware of every living entity. It doesn't matter how big or how small. You know, we have our choice. My goodness, I have my choice. And how many times a day am I making the wrong choice? Yeah. Yeah. This is a very important point because the Kumaras. The Kumaras are making a wrong choice. Maybe in some perspectives. Third canto, we're starting to get very subtle here, you know, about did the Kumaras make a wrong choice? Should the Kumaras have said in a more polite fashion, "Our dear father, you requested us to have progeny and everything else, but we want to go ahead and just fully develop spiritual consciousness. So maybe you can, from your potency, produce more offspring who we can guide, you know, from this perspective, but they will be inclined to enter into this mode of passion and have progeny." And Lord Brahma might have said, "Oh, okay, very good idea, very good. Yes, I'm glad to have you as children. Okay, here I go again." Yeah. And Lord Shiva, he kind of came out and he kind of did the wrong thing, but it wasn't at all like irritating to Lord Brahma, because it just kind of like it was his own fault. It was produced from his own passion. He understood why it was going on. And he made the right choice. Brahma asked him, "Please be calm and do meditation until it's time for your activities," like that. Okay. So very complicated story. And I guess we're supposed to negotiate around it by running behind Srila Prabhupada as he goes through all these leelas, you know, chanting Hare Krishna like that and Panchatattva mantra. And then we think we can become changed. We can find our position like that. Yeah. Okay. Sometimes we misuse our personal intelligence. Yes. If the sun is unreservedly willing to be guided by the Father, the Father is 10 times more eager to instruct and guide him by all means. If the Son is unreservedly willing to be guided by the Father is 10 times more eager to guide, to instruct and guide him by all means. Take us apart so much, you know, like that. So in the picture there on the right, we have something which you may recognize, which is a wolf in sheep's clothing. If you look up that on images on the Google there, Google wolf sheep's clothing, oh, you get a lot back. It's a common concept, you know. And probably, of course, Vedavyas or Narada Muni didn't have this cultural concept, this cultural icon. But we do. You put this picture up in front of people like this. This is more of I chose a kind of more classical one, black and white. Then right away, people, you know, it's there in their face and it starts stimulating the concentration. And of course, again, this is what I feel about myself. You know, I'm a I'm a sense enjoyer in sannyasi dress, you know, to some degree here. You know, I do not require much prasad, but I do require that it be of good quality, like that. I don't require many possessions, but I do want a Seiko wristwatch, Halliburton briefcase, and Birkenstock shoes, yeah, and silk cloth, yes. So this is the situation: unreservedly willing, you know, and. You know, that whatever willingness we have, even though we're reserving part of it, and of course the circumstances, maybe the circumstances is allowing me to do something now. I get a little more stimulation by passion and ignorance, and I resonate with those because of my previous conditioning or because of my desire. You know, I want to be stimulated by the opposite sex. I want to see the girls laughing at my jokes during the class. I want to see them nodding their heads in response to my statements. It's amazing. And the girls want to attract the man, the big man. They want to attract the sannyasi. So they're all smiling and nodding their heads up and down at him, even though they don't really comprehend everything he said, so on. So if we're inclined to this passion, you know, then, okay, as a matter of choice, then we can't take advantage of the different opportunities that arise in the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness comes by force upon us. Okay, it's here. The early morning comes. Every day the morning comes. It's an opportunity to get up. You know, one of my strong features, I think, which is saving me, is that right now at one, my clock, you know, my cell phone here, at 1:15, the thing starts going off, you know, bah, 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 like that. So if I was intelligent the night before, to follow Nara Hari's point, I put the cell phone over by the far enough away from you so I can't hit the snooze button. And then I have to get up and walk over to where the light is. Okay, I've told myself before you go to bed, you know, you can't turn the thing off until the light is on. Okay, light is on, turn it off, there's a glass of water right there, right there. Drink it. I don't want to drink it. Okay. Drink the whole thing. And of course you go to the private room and worship and everything else. Come back. But now you're a little bit moving. Sit down. Okay. You know, sit up. You know, start chanting within a few minutes, even though you've had, you know, cheese pizza late at night or something. Your body starts cleaning up and functioning. And some effort, many different tricks you can chant. One thing is to chant for 20 minutes, read for 20 minutes, and then write for 20 minutes. You know? And what do you know? You're starting to produce all kinds of very, very nice literature, which you can circulate and get feedback on it. And devotees say, that's very nice, but you think you should redo it and focus on this. Okay. And maybe it takes six times before you finally get something which is actually like the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. You know, it's actually a book that Prabhupada did, you know, through us, like that, as good as any of his other books, you know. So becoming unreservedly, you know, willing, and because otherwise we get instructions from Krishna, you know, tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam. We get instructions from the heart, but they're kind of like, you know, maybe like not full attention. Uddhava, Krishna was talking to Uddhava directly, and he was giving lessons to Maitreya indirectly, you know. So we may be getting them, and we're getting inspiration, but it's not the same as when we're free from all this selfishness and so on. Yeah. So maybe my point there is that, and when we get that, then we get so many more instructions, detailed instructions, moment to moment, like that, 10 times more eager. The father and son relationship as exhibited here in the dealings of Brahma and Manu is excellent. Both the father and the son are well qualified, and their example should be followed by all humankind. Humankind. Okay. Move on to the next slide here. There we go. Manu, the son, unreservedly asked the father, Brahma, to instruct him. And the father, who was full of Vedic wisdom, okay, here's what kind of father. He's a father who's full of Vedic wisdom, was very glad to instruct. The example of the father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons. Okay. Yeah. So I was a lot of things. One is, that's the end of the purport, you know. But a couple of things came up, you know, that we were talking about then, having fathers, and Srila Prabhupada being our father, Vidagdha Prabhu talking about that. But also older godbrothers being our fathers, you know. I think I have it on the next page. We'll have ahead here. Yeah, godbrothers, yeah. I wasn't able to complete this because I went to the Vedabase.com, and it says that the Apache search engine is not working. So I don't know. We have to get a hold of Prahlad. See, behind the Vedabase.com is a person. It's Prahlad Nrisimha, who we had the good fortune to initiate. He's in Mayapur. He got beat up. He got knocked unconscious during that whole political thing that went on there. So he's a whole person. And he's trying to develop it more. He's trying to get so everybody can have their own account for free. You can keep your own bookmarks, you know, and have a welcome page, which anybody, a new person coming, it would like direct them, you know, to be able to understand the Vedabase and things like that, you know, so on. And he's already got it in several languages, you know, so on. Yeah. So the search engine usually works. I don't know what's happening. Maybe it'll correct itself, or you go talk to him. Yeah. And because I remember I did this search for godbrothers some time ago, and I think it was Prahlad Maharaj. I couldn't find it, you know, looking through Prahlad Maharaj's description. But what it said is that, I think it was Prahlad, he treated his older godbrothers as his spiritual master. And probably in the purport then reinforces that. You know, a sincere older godbrother is as good as, in many respects, you know, as good as the spiritual master. And so in my own particular life, you see the picture here, I know I especially, my connection, my physical connection, you know, my mankind connection with Prabhupada, first off, especially through Jayananda, you know, when I joined, a little bit Bhaktadas and others, but he was very prominent, you know, because his connection with Prabhupada was so profound, you know, over a long period of time, like that and so on. And so that's how, you know, he would say, Prabhupada's like this, like that. And it may not be that the person is completely transparent, you know. You know, for example, another person I was dealing with was Hansa Duda. You know, and he came maybe after that as a very prominent person with a lot of, again, physical, personal association with Prabhupada. But he had his own particular way of looking at things. He self-declared in his own history and everything else, he had tended to be more like a kshatriya, you know, like an emperor. He probably even called he and Madhavisa the king and the emperor of Kirtan. So he had this natural thing to govern men, to guide them, to inspire them, and to work through men, you know, rather than working through his own tools. But also he was a cook. His father had the same characteristics. So I learned, got to know him. He said after he got his Gayatri Mantra, he went to Prabhupada in the morning and asked, he said, Prabhupada, what's the significance and everything of the Gayatri? And he said, Prabhupada said, it is not so important. Okay. Then he asked him later on during the day, and Prabhupada said the same thing again, and third time in the evening. So three times in the first day, he said that Prabhupada told him, it is not so important. Yeah. But I would understand that it's not so important for you, because he's in the mode of passion. He would do, you know, bath, tilak, sit down in front of Prabhupada and chant his Gayatri when he was in the mood. Other times, if something else was happening, you know, some opportunity to get an article in the biggest newspaper in the Bay Area, he would be on the phone instructing people and he would come out like that, you know? Yeah. So, more pragmatic. Other times, brahmanas, you know, Prabhupada was telling them, okay, the temple president, you have to make sure all your Brahmin disciples are chanting all their Gayatris. So we get to know people, and we know what kind of telescope we're dealing with, yeah? And then we can see Prabhupada in a very practical sense that we wouldn't see otherwise. Of course, also we have Prabhupada's association through his books, you know? Then Bhattisru Damodaramaras, other senior person. So those three people, three older godbrothers, were my very strong connections for myself, you know? Yeah. 3.13.4 in this same sequence. It says we have to hear for a long time with great austerity, and that's how we're going to do it. So it doesn't matter what it is, you know, whatever job it is or anything else, hearing, if we're human beings, not just seeing the example, if we're animals, you know, is important. And it takes austerity. It's austere to sit down and chant your rounds, you know, or else keep your fingers in a bead bag moving. You want to do something else. You want to write. You want to, you know, play the piano. You want to take a hoe in your hand. You know, yeah, you want to, yeah. But to hear, it takes a certain physical austerity, you know, to hear properly. And then the mind, it wants to hear something else, you know. So we have to hear for a long time. That's the austerity that Manu and everybody else are taking up. And hearing about Krishna, and it says here also about his devotees at that. So very important to hear about other godbrothers and other senior devotees and what they're saying and what they're doing and things like that. You know, but within this perspective of Srila Prabhupada, you know, godbrothers, okay. But another point was, it says, this is 3.13.8, which was yesterday, this line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, yeah? Whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material, but both are on the progressive march towards the same goal of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so this section very much coming down into the mode of passion, which is good in terms of our service or in terms of our attachment, you know, one of those two. And so, you know, I've actually myself, other people too, maybe you've also realized this, that again, this one of my central mantras is Mark Twain's comment, that life would be a lot easier if we were all born 80 years old and got younger. A lot of us maybe now in our 60s, and we think we're getting pretty wise, you know, like that. But hey, what's it going to be like when we're in our 70s if we live that long? You know, then we're going to really, if we do even go on chanting and everything else, really have got some common sense and some organized intelligence. Yeah. Uttama Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari, he's convinced about the process. This works, you know. As it goes, Shraddha Shabda, Vishvas Kahi, Sudure Dhanishchoy, Krishna Bhakti Koile, Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. Yeah. This word Shabda, it means Vishvas, reliable, dependable, that just by doing Krishna Bhakti, everything else will happen. So he has so many doubts, so many even attachments and everything else still, you know. But he's convinced about the process. He's convinced about 16 rounds, 4 regular principles. Yeah. He's convinced about then the activities in the mode of goodness as a Brahmin. Or finally he's convinced about becoming a Goswami in the different literature and intelligence. Uttama Adhikari has more Shraddha, more intense, but he's developed his logic. You know? He's gone through and picked out different phrases, aphorisms. And like Narhari was saying, different phrases will stick out. Yeah, and they pop up when you're trying to make your choices in life and your guidance and develop your attitude, your bhava. These things will pop up. Yeah, and so you collect these and then you connect them together. I don't need that one. That's extra. So I don't reinforce it as long as I got this one. And we build our logic. You know, so same way. I see definitely that. You know, if I had had a more civilized relationship with different people in my life, for example, I was married, you know, I was just becoming a devotee, and very nice person, you know, but I didn't know how to run the situation, neither did she, so in the end, you know, we separated, she actually filed for the divorce, you know, kind of also basically came down to like, you know, if you want me, you got to stop following these four principles, you know, like that. We have to have illicit sexual relations like normal people and eat meat like normal people, okay? So it kind of came down to that, you know? And if not, I'm going to make your life miserable for the next 40 years until you finally bend to my will. So I think that's... woman's war is the war of attrition. You know, let's start working on the fellow, you know, whatever. And man's war is the war of, the blitzkrieg, you know? We're smashing their wind and take land and forget about it, you know? So... you know, but I didn't think it was a good proposition for her or for me that she make our both of our lives miserable for the next 40 years. That was my perspective of the thing. So kind of like pushed the point. Okay, this, you know, me or what is it? You follow the four principles, or I'm out of this, something like that. And she followed up with the actual divorce thing there. So everything, in practically speaking, I have no which criticism of. Practicing anybody I've met, you know, so on, and no problem thinking they're better people than me, yeah. But if I'd known what to do, what to have done, yeah, it wouldn't have been so difficult. I could have become a lawyer, okay, then I would have had a respectable position in society. I could have even aimed at becoming Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States of America. And then, you know, we got some information on vegetarianism. We teach people how to make cheese pizza and stuff. Okay, and then the thing would have adjusted and everybody would have been happy. You know, my husband has his a little bit odd religion, but that's okay. It's interesting. My husband is a Greek monk or something. What is it? He worships Egyptian, you know, pharaohs in his little private room. You know, okay, he keeps it to himself. And then gradually the thing is natural, you know, that the relationships are progressive. You know, it may take some time, but yeah, moving ahead, you know. And inside, things are moving ahead at a totally as fast as we can possibly make them move like that. So different relationships. My family had been pioneers. I finally figured that out. And that's for generations. And that's my nature too, pioneer. And once things are going a little bit, lose interest. You know, and then move ahead, you know, to the next exciting adventure. What else? My father, all his teeth fell out when he was about something, I guess maybe like 55 or something, maybe 50. And I noticed mine are falling out, but I'm keeping them a little bit longer. He had tremendous visual acuity, so he became an accountant. I got the same thing, you know. My mother's side. It goes on like that. You start to know this is very, very real, very practical, even now. And if we know our family heritage and our tradition, we're going to know what kind of psychosocial tool we have, and we can be in the mode of goodness. And then we can make very rapid progress to making our life strong and healthy. And because of that, then all around us, we can engage so many other people like that. Boy, we have so much opportunity. You know, we engage so many people if we're more purified and more qualified. Okay, so in concern with the material progressive and the spiritual progressive, anything else I have here? Okay, and finally, these PowerPoint shows. This is the way my mind thinks. Brahma Samhita 5:56. I worship that transcendental seat known as Sweta Dweep, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem. All water is nectar. Every word is a song. Every gate is a dance. The flute is the favorite attendant. Oh, where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a few very self-realized souls in this world. Jai, Goloka Vrindavan ki jai. Yeah, yeah. It's that kind of sounds like the Wizard of Oz. We see these things, you know, which are what? They're reflections. And what else is there? There's nothing in this world but reflections of Goloka. In the mode of goodness, it's an accurate reflection. Yeah? In the mode of passion, it's a little bit twisted. In the mode of ignorance, it's a complete opposite. You know, like that. But it's a reflection. Yeah? So even in the mode of ignorance, if we stand on our heads, we can see Goloka like that. And that's the goal of all this. You know, the material progress, the spiritual progress, Maitreya and Vidura. Yeah, is to become one of those very few self-realized souls in this world. And this beautiful picture of Radha and Krishna. Nice picture. Yeah. Ooh-dood. Yeah. Sangat Sanjaya K. Kama. And, of course, all this, the main thing is how to get association. We're discussing that again and again. How to associate. Brahma's and Swayambhu Manu's association, it's, you know, they're connected, but in some ways, like it's in the mode of passion, so it seems like a little bit impersonal. I'll do this job for you. Okay, and thank you. I thank you for doing this job for me. So there's a tool in between, but you know, how intimate is it? You know, but still, there's association. I guess there's both material and spiritual association there, which will develop more as we see their relationship in the future. You know? But of course, we want to get Srila Prabhupada's association. Our desires and ambitions develop from the company we keep. Sangha Sanjayate Kama. How to get Prabhupada's association more and more. We can get his association by being good members of ISKCON, doing our job as citizens. You know, we can get his association by being responsible members of our individual sanghas and communities and in the circles within ISKCON. And finally, we can get our own individual unique relationship with Prabhupada, which may be through so many transparent by media, but it's us and Prabhupada. It's the point, unless we have that personal, individual relationship with Srila Prabhupada, you know, I would say we're not really, you know, part of ISKCON. That's what it comes down to. And then, of course, how is my GBC, my husband or wife, how are they actually a part of that and helping me get that personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada? And I think that's all. Okay. So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, anything else?
Just a moment, Maharaj. Okay, so, Prabhu, would anyone like to make a comment or have any questions or anything?
Maharaj, you got me thinking on, what did you say it was a quote from Mark Twain or someone that be interesting if we could start out at 80 or something like that and get younger? That was sort of an interesting thought, and I couldn't stop thinking about that, seeing it. Well, the advantage of it going the other way. I definitely saw the advantage of starting out older, and then you have this wisdom to take back with you. But I think going through being like a stupid youth builds wisdom. I mean, that's how we kind of got wise and smart, is that we started out young and stupid and made all the mistakes. And that sort of brought us to the point of wisdom. And then for a devotee, the silver lining, I guess you could say, in being a misguided youth, seeing this from more than one angle of vision now, of course, it's ideally, let's say the ideal situation is Prahlad, you know, Komaram Achare Pragyo, inquiring when we were children. But I guess in the Kali Yuga, the positive side is that we don't have to be first-class intelligent. Because I don't think I could have been first-class intelligent. If someone would have told me the material world is miserable, all it's going to do is you're going to get burned, so forget it, take the spiritual life from youth, I don't think that I would have been first-class intelligent, could have heard that. The advantage was that by the time I came in contact with the devotees, it seems like we already tried everything, sex, drugs, and rock and roll to the max. And then, you know, we were able to get it when we heard. So anyway, I was just thinking of seeing that just from another angle of vision, that maybe advantage of starting
kind of
young and stupid.
Plato. He said, my greatest pleasure is talking to old, experienced men because I may have to go down the same pathway they did in life. So that perspective, if we can hear the stuff and learn the stuff. You know the one about Mark Twain, his talk when he was 18 years old, and he said he had a talk with his father about what his life and his, you know, finally and everything else, very serious talk, you know. You know, that Maxim or just anyway, he said he had to talk with his father, and he said he had to comment that the old boy didn't know too much about life, really, you know, and stuff. So he was going to go out and find out for himself. So he went off traveling, and maybe became a sailor and traveled around the world and everything else. And maybe about 7 years later, he came back, and 25 years old, and he said he had another talk with his father about what is life and everything else. And he said, you know, I was amazed how much the old boy had learned in 7 years. Yeah. So I read Shakespeare when I was in high school, but I even now, you know, Shakespeare knew what was going on in society. You know, as you've gone through life and seen everything else, you read Shakespeare again, man, you see, you know. So I think maybe that perspective that's the point, is that we can just, the more we can hear from these old experienced people who aren't old fools, you know, then it makes life a lot easier. But yeah, you know, how much first class can we learn? How much second class learners? How much third class learners are we? How much fourth, fifth class? Wow.
Yeah, we never had to be first class intelligent. We only had to come second class is all that was required for us, and I think myself it was an advantage.
Yeah, it was so stupid we couldn't learn the first class way. Yeah, wow.
We just don't want to become third class intelligent.
But if we can become first class, it's good. The more we read something.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes we'll read something in Prabhupada's books, and it's okay, accept it. Okay, then we apply it, you know. Yeah. Prabhupada says in one purport, he says that in a big function, the Brahmins will be happy if there's good dakshin from performing sacrifice, and the Kshatriyas will be happy if there's good drinking. Okay, so accept it. We're organizing some program. We may give a chance to the Brahmins. They can give classes and, you know, and they can do pujas and then everything else, and they think, good program, Maharaj, you organize a nice program. And then some good drinking, so the Kshatriyas can sit there and get a little tipsy on, orange juice with a little honey in it or something, and, you know, exchange their boastful remarks and then go back to something else. We're just about headed. I think this is the next week is our last class, I think. Because,
Oh, that's right. So it'll be a while.
Where are you going?
No, then we'll go to South America for this psychology and the sacred, symposium with the National Library. And this is where, again, I've gotten, it's gone beyond my means to control or whatever at this point. So I'm really feeling like a passenger on a ship at this point. And things are going well. Auspicious pleases. We have very good people, very internationally famous people coming, and nice people. If I can give one example, again, it's Daryl Bryant. He's from the University of Ottawa, up here in Canada, United States. And he's, he was recommended by the libraries to come and stuff. Okay. From our side, I got Radhika. And I got some of Daryl's books, got in contact with him. He was a friendly guy, approachable, nice. Some of his books. And he's very much had a history of interfaith dialogue. He knew the Hare Krishnas from defending them during the cult era. That's about as much as he came in contact with them. And at the top of the letter I wrote, Radhe. And in lecture, he wrote back, Radhe, Radhe. So then I finally put him and Radhika in touch on the telephone, and I was sitting in the background prompting him. And after about 5 minutes, they really connected. Then they just took off. They knew all these people in common. And afterwards, they were going to, okay, I'll read your book, you read my book, we'll get back together again. So, and then in India, I'm talking to our contacts in India, and they say, of course, Daryl Bryan. We organize programs for him at the University of Calcutta. Wow. So they're very nice people, And like Sukadeva Goswami, it seems like that. I mean, maybe we're getting, there'll be some good, very strong connections, where we can connect up our potencies with other people, and together we can fight evil.
Mario, do you have time for one more question?
Yeah. Go.
Hare Krishna, Mara. I just wanted to ask you, maybe I didn't understand, about Lord Varaha you was mentioning. It was very interesting in the beginning at the class, at the beginning, that another incarnations wouldn't give liberation, and Lord Varaha is offering. Could you please elaborate on that?
Where did I hear it? I can't. Maybe it's in the beginning of, Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it's talking about it. It says, Namo Mahavaranyaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate. Because Lord Chaitanya, Sanatana Goswami is saying this, when they meet for the first time in Ramakeli, you were the most munificent Mahavaranyaya, avatar. Because you're not only giving liberation from this cycle, but you're also giving, waking up people's love of God, not just Sayuja Mukti. And beyond that, he's giving it in the mood of Vrindavan. And beyond that, he's giving it in the mood of the gopis in Vrindavan. And beyond that, he's giving it in the mood of the best of the gopis. And beyond that, he's giving it in the mood of the best of the gopis in Viraha, in separation from Krishna. Oh, wow, what an opportunity. What an opportunity, So that's, and I heard it, and I was kind of the same way. You have to examine it. And again, if you look at it so many times, that's all the demigods want from Vishnu. Vishnu comes, helps him defeat Britasura, and after Britasura is defeated, well, thank you very much for your visit. You're going now, aren't you? Because if you hang around, we have to stay on this ecstatic, life-threatening level of spiritual existence and stuff. And maybe we don't know how to do it. We're not that advanced yet. But that's again, maybe where I heard it, and my experience is certainly that's re-examining it. is that it's a fact. Most of the incarnations come and adjust things so the demigods, ones we hear about, can be progressive. You know, the Sakam devotees can be progressive. But then, the Bhagavatam talks a lot about this point, about dharmasya hi apavargasya anartavritaya upakalpite. But the purpose of dharma is apavarga, is religion. I'm sorry, is liberation. So, again, it's not like boxes. You know, you are this or that or this or that. It's kind of German, you know. No, maybe we're materially attached and we don't realize it. Maybe we're materially attached and we realize that we want to get out of it. That's why we're suffering. And then maybe we are out of it, you know, a lot of the day. Maybe our sadhana puts us in a liberated stage a lot. And then we can actually work on, you know, waking up our relationship with Krishna, you know, like that. But then, you know, depending on our level, you know, how much is like what? Yeah. Is that a little better?
Yeah, thank you. If you can also mention where in Chaitanya Charitamrita it's described?
I just kind of say, I can't remember exactly where I heard it. It's one of those kind of things. It's kind of like, yeah, and I think it was Prabhupada. I don't think it was like, you know, maybe Radha Maharaj's lecture or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But where it's discussed is that point. In the beginning, it's the confidential reasons. In those chapters in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the general principles discussed about, you know, the reasons for Lord Chaitanya's incarnation, like that. And there he says, you know, I've come many times and I haven't given love of God in this fashion and so on. So it's disgusting. He's talking about his own incarnations and he doesn't, I haven't given love of God for a long time, you know. And the confidential reason is to give it in the mood of Vrindavan, which Sriman Narayan can't do.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay.
Okay, Maharaj. It doesn't sound like anybody else is going to have a question or comment.
Okay. Okay, so I'll go and shave. I shave every 2 weeks. Cut my weeds. And chant Hare Krishna. I guess maybe one more class then. We'll be online one more time next Thursday.
Yeah, I have a quick question. How long will that hiatus be? How long will it be gone
With us? 4 weeks. We'll be setting up the program 1 week. We'll be executing 1 week. And hopefully I'll be able to send good results from that thing. At least for me, this is interesting, you know. These are people that are realizing what we're talking about from a different point of view, and it helps a lot to see how they're actually dealing with this stuff and how they're dealing with it on a practical level, you know. And then we'll go to Bolivia, Alto Peru, for a week, and back down to Bajo Peru, you know, Lima, for a week, and they'll have the 50th anniversary celebration, that kind of stuff. They're taking advantage of some of these devotees that are coming from the symposium. And then we'll be back in Houston. We'll be there until August. But once we're in Houston, though, we can be online all the time. But Houston, again, this is like it'll be supposed to be. I don't know how much you're going to organize it. North American Symposium on Education with ISKCON. So, of course, the idea is that, you know, the Ministry of Education wants everybody, especially this program, this e-sangha program, one of the premier programs in education in ISKCON, should be promoted so other people know about it and, for example, can find out why it works as a question. Why don't other places, why doesn't Boise, Idaho have this? I have some ideas why they don't have it, you know, but maybe think about it. What were the elements to make a thing like this work? Because there's so many temples like this here and there, you know, once they got this principle. Like Sunday school, same thing. So many programs. Once you get a Sunday school going, wow. You know, you can take off in so many ways like that.
Maharaj,
okay, so thank you very much.
I'm sorry. Somebody had a question. I couldn't pick up who it was.
Oh, this is Bhakti Chris here in New Mexico.
Oh.
Yeah, Hanuman Prasad, are you still in touch with Hansa Duda?
No. I tried to get back in touch with him, like, you know, some time ago, called his phone number, there was no answer. But I hear about him, you know, from, from different people like that. Yeah. Is this the Bhakta Chris who used to be in Yuba City?
Yes, you I think you remember me. I used to live in Chico, California.
Chico, not Chico. You used to work for the Chico bi-weekly newspaper.
Yes, I was yes, I did.
Chico. Yeah, I thought it was you. It sounded like you. Yeah. No, I haven't been, you know, I hear from people. He had a, you know, of course he had a heart attack and went through it and was chanting Hare Krishna all the time. He was anesthetized and open chest surgery. And he said it was kind of just a flash out of the blue. He's talking to Gurudas. It wasn't part of his whole health thing. And he has his own nature, his own karma, you know, a very strong person, but at the same time, too, you know, maybe a little proud. So that tends to, you know, cause friction with this potency and stuff and sparks shooting off. But he, you know, Hermati and other people in the Mayapur, he's still associating with them and cooking. Cooking for them, yeah. He showed them how to make hash brown potatoes. So the trick with the hash brown potatoes is you don't hash them up too many at a time, otherwise they turn gray. So as you're cooking them, you're just like grating them at the same time and stuff. Okay, and so it's wonderful, you know, association, making progress like that. Yeah. Okay, so we'll go now. So thank you all very much. And thank you all for the classes. You see, we're like listening to them and participating as students also. So thank you very much for that mercy.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj. We'll see you back here in 4 weeks.
Yeah, next week I'll be here too. Yeah.
Okay, right.
One more week. Hare Krishna, mates.
Hare Krishna.
Adios.